From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. No propaganda, no lies, and definitely no BS. You're with George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome to Friday. And for the Orthodox worldwide, happy Good Friday. Orthodox Christianity celebrates Easter, well, a week after everybody else. Not really worth getting into at the moment. It's actually an interesting story, though. So we will get into it at some other time. The big story in the news right now is that document leak from the Pentagon. Now, we've got a 21-year-old Air National Guardsman named Jack Teixeira. I hope I'm not bastardizing his name too much. It's how he could get his hands on the documents. Now, he is a junior airman, and he's accused of uploading troves of secret and top-secret docs to Discord. And they're saying that this leak is bigger than what Snowden did. He's actually, his rank is Airman First Class, and he's the lowest petty officer rank the Air Force grants enlisted troops. But here's what's wrong with the whole situation. His job is actually a cyber transport system journeyman. Now, that would not have given him access to intelligence analysis. He's not working in that. He works with IT infrastructure. Well, what's that mean? When you need to update your software on your computer, you call Jack. When you need to make sure Word is updated, you call Jack. That's his job. So because he works on a secure system, he probably had the security clearance. Well, that would be why, regardless of what he does on it. If it's with the military, it's automatically secure, even if they only send happy faces on the thing. It's like the CIA. But every single official is wondering how in the hell he did this. And not just how he did it, but, I mean, the whole thing is just odd. Now, he did work with the Air National Guard's 102nd Intelligence Wing. So the information was there. But, you know, 21 years old, he's a kid, more or less, okay, a young man. Why in the hell would ever possess anybody to just start posting, dumping 3,000 secret documents on Discord? He had to have been briefed on the fact that, you know, if he did something like this, he'll be retirement age before he gets out of prison, which is most likely what's going to happen at this point. So the story, as it develops, and what I've been saying about it, it actually changes. It changes the story that I've been saying over the last, well, day or so. I was wrong. But I talked to John Helmer today, and he's still convinced that this 21-year-old was being fed documents, fake and real, to put out there. I really don't see it, and I really don't think it's possible to find out what exactly happened with this for quite a while. So we'll see. We'll see how all of that works out. Now, if you're listening to TNT, you don't have to miss out on a thing. And just be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play, so you can easily listen live to us anywhere, anytime. That's available right now to download, because we're keeping you up to speed on TNT Radio.
Stay up to date through your workday.
I stream it at my desk.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we've got TNT talk show host and producer extraordinaire DD Denslow in the house. DD, welcome. How's your day going?
It's going all right, George. I'm actually gearing up. I've mentioned to you before, I'm gearing up for a massive canvassing session this weekend because I'm standing in the local elections in Plymouth. So that's
well,
where my mind
is. Tell us about
it
a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if you heard of the Plymouth Tree Massacre, which is the name of the event. Have you heard of that? It did make it outside of our shores here in the UK, but I haven't heard about it. In Plymouth, we're in the UK, we're gearing up for 15-minute cities. Climate change and net zero is like the major political policy that overarches everything in climate change. In our city, we've got in the city centre of Plymouth, we had what we call an urban forest. So it was about, there's about 150 trees there. The council wanted to cut them down for climate change. The public said, no, don't cut these trees down there. They've been there for decades and decades. We like these trees. They signed an executive order, the local council, a conservative-led council, a guy called Richard Bingley, a right snake. And within 2 hours, under the cover of darkness, they went out and cut down about 120 mature trees. It killed birds. There was nesting birds, all sorts. And I have stood in local elections before. I stood during COVID to try and wake people up to what was going on in my local area. And I'm standing again because we don't live in a democracy, George. And so my first canvassing, I've just had 10,000 leaflets delivered. And tomorrow I'll be out in the ward, in the area of the city where these trees were cut down, to see if I can win a seat as a local councillor, as the Plymouth's first ever independent councillor that was elected into office. So my campaign begins in earnest tomorrow, George.
Well, we wish you the best of luck with that, Didi. Seriously, this will be a great thing because, you really do give a damn about what's going on with people's lives. And if you're doing it with TNT here, I know you're doing it back there at home. Uh-huh. I mean, wish you the best of luck with this.
Yeah, thanks very much, George. My chances of are almost zero. That's more, I understand that. But, you've got to sort of stand up. And there is a push across the country to try and see if we can dislodge some of these, some of the party politics from our local authorities. But it's a very difficult challenge without a rosette, without a red or blue rosette. It's very, very difficult.
All right. Now, you wanted to start, go back into the story about the airmen and the leaking classified military records.
So he has actually, I'm going to try my best not to repeat any of the information that you've just put out in your editorial. He has actually been in court this morning. This morning as it is over in the USA. He has been charged. He has been remanded until Wednesday. I suspect Teixeira is going to have the book thrown at him. I do have some questions, though. One of the questions is, how did the authorities track him down so quickly? Is it because he was very lax in the way that he obtained and released these documents? There is some commentary here to say that he was very, very concerned. The suspect was concerned over making transcriptions at workplace. And I don't 100% know exactly what that means. According to the user, it says the suspect began taking the documents to his residence and photographing them. So I'm assuming that is somebody who maybe grassed him up or has informed on him. But the question to you, George, is how did they find him so quickly?
I honestly don't know. To be honest,
is it unusual?
If they knew the means that he leaked it, Discord, if they knew the account, they could have traced it that way. I really just don't know.
because I've seen people comment saying they found him. Some people are saying, oh, they found him so quickly. Oh, these leaks must be real. Other people are saying, oh, they found him so quickly. These leaks can't be real. I don't understand really what the case or what the argument would be for either of those statements. To say that these leaks are worse than the leaks that were put out into the public domain by Edward Snowden, the American military would say that, wouldn't they, in this case, because of the sort of global sensitive nature of the Ukraine war and the fact that it really, really, I don't think these leaks make the US government look very good internationally and internally, domestically, in their own country. Are these leaks as bad as the Snowden leaks? I don't think they are.
This is only a small fraction is what they're saying. There's supposed to be 3,000 or so documents. So, you know, we don't know what's on the other ones is the thing. Is it as bad? Well, you know, you're supporting Ukraine in a war and you just gave their entire battle plan away. So that's a big oops. That's a really big oops. Beyond that, you have admissions that they're spying on foreign leaders, you know, the usual stuff. You remember when, the Obama administration got tagged for spying on Angela Merkel. All right. Mm-hmm. That was in the news for quite a while. So, you know, let's see how this thing plays out. And that's the thing is, I really have no idea how this is going to play out and what's real about it and what's not. So, we'll see. Hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, I've got the BBC ticker here open. They've got a live commentary coming through minute by minute. And in here, in their summary, they're saying at least 50, but perhaps more than 100 secret documents were posted on the platform. You're suggesting that there may be up to 3,000 documents. That's a number way higher than what I have seen anywhere.
Right. That's what I read somewhere today. I'm not even sure. And it's the whole thing is just, it's really, really odd. He's 21, he's young, okay, granted, but he's in the military. They would have told him, okay, if you do this, this is the ramifications you'll face. So, all right, he takes him and he puts it on social media. I really don't know what to make of that, because you threw your life away to get a Facebook like, is what it amounts to.
Mm-hmm. Unless he's, he's not even a spy. Yeah, unless he's very anti-war, yeah? And he's been indoctrinated in some sort of way or conditioned in some sort of way to be very, very anti-war. But that almost doesn't make sense either, because he's an American, part of the American military personnel. And you would assume going into the military, you might be at least neutral in war or pro-war. Otherwise, you wouldn't join the military, would you? Yeah, it's all very, very weird, George, and I get the feeling that there is something else going on with this story.
Exactly.
Obviously, that we're not being told. And also, these documents were supposed to have been available on Discord for months before it became a mainstream story. And then once it became a mainstream story, within just a few days, a week, they've caught the culprit. They've put him in court. He is now behind bars, and he may never really see the light of day again from now going forward, like you said, until retirement age. It might be very difficult for us to ever find out the truth. He's just going to be another. He'll be like another Assange, won't he?
Well, no. Julian Assange did what he did. He didn't hack anything. He didn't leak anything. He published stuff. There's a world of difference between the two, between journalism And, you know, being in the military and just, you know, taking home top secret paperwork and, you know, handing it to the neighbors, you know, at a party.
Do you think that, let's just say his intentions were good, yeah? And that he was trying to inform the public or trying to do something that might have prevented the war. Do you think then he, if that was the case, he was justified in what he was doing? Or do you think from like from the point of view of national secrets and a military perspective that actually he has committed a crime and that he shouldn't be leaking materials to the public domain in any way or form, regardless of his motives? What's your view there?
He would have had to have leaked it to somebody in the press or tried to, if that was the case. But he didn't. He put it up in a public room in his on board. He didn't try to leak it to anybody. He wasn't trying to inform anybody except for, you know, that's the thing. What's his motivation here?
Yeah.
So it's not for the public good. Did the public need to know about this? Should the public have known about this? Yeah. You know, I've been talking about this and a lot of other people, U.S. soldiers have been in Ukraine for a long time on the front lines. We've been talking about this, that the SAS is there, that the Green Berets are there, that, all right, you have different forces there. They probably change depending on what season of the year it's in. But, all right, now you get this leak that says, okay, well, this says we just find out now that, you know, this is going on when, you know, you had to ignore that news before. You know, I'm glad that's out, but that really doesn't add anything to anything. The fact that Ukraine is losing so bad, okay, well, you've got it on a secret document, but the simple facts on the ground is they're losing bad and you have 100 people reporting on that every day. Okay, you have to ignore it to miss it. So, okay, if that's a secret in a document, it's not a very big one, that Ukraine is going to lose its spring break bum rush going east. That's just a given because they're losing the war and they're losing so many people so bad. They don't have a chance. They never had a chance, and they're just trying to flush the pipes out of regular people, get rid of the regular people in Ukraine and leave as many nationalists as they can to build a majority. I mean, it's, you know, been reporting on this for forever. And it's, you know, I'm not just talking about me. I'm talking about everybody.
Yeah.
So that's not a big secret there. The U.S. spies on foreign leaders. Well, that kind of broke really big with Angela Merkel and the, you know, the whole concept that the U.S. does this all the time was discussed very openly back then. Okay, so we have that. So where's the breaking news here?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say there's nothing that's been released is actually, you know, anything that isn't really either common knowledge or in the public domain anyway.
So what haven't they released? And I think that's where this whole thing sits. What isn't making it into the news? And, you know, if there is something, if there isn't something, you know, at this point, we don't know. The fact that he would throw his life away for stuff that's basically public knowledge.
Yeah. Do you think then, I've just had a thought, George. I mean, do you think maybe in a week's time, the next story related to this intelligence leak comes out and it says, oh, he was working for the Russians. Do you think that there's a potential that that's going to come out down the, you know, a little bit later on down the line?
Well, it's who knows? Who the hell knows? You know, with media in the U.S. the way today, yeah, that would be the next step. I'm surprised it's not the first step.
Yeah, I was surprised that hasn't happened yet either. You know,
that's just the reality. It's a great question. And, you know, here's the thing. Would the Russians want secret information put out over Discord if they're going to retrieve it? Because it's a public, so those accounts would be able to be tracked down.
So yeah, you think the Russians would want it mainstream, wouldn't they? They would want him to have it mainstream, or they would have had it mainstream if they could, rather than some little dark corner of the internet.
It's just, the whole thing is just really, really odd. Really odd. All right. What else do you have in the news today?
I did say at the end of our conversation yesterday that I would find a slightly different, more unusual story. And I actually had one already sitting on my little slides that I prepare for the conversations that I have. And I'll keep it fairly short. But the headline goes, "Drug Lord's Hippo Killed in Highway Collision." A hippopotamus descended from the menagerie of Colombian cocaine baron Pablo Escobar, everyone's favorite dead drug dealer, are considered an invasive species. So I'm just going to read a little bit more of the story in a sec. But my question for you, George, is, did you know that there were hippos in Colombia? Because I didn't until yesterday.
He flew them over from Africa. That's why they're invasive. But I didn't know he had a hippo there. He had a whole
zoo in Colombia of all sorts of animals, from big cats to giraffes to monkeys, and to the most dangerous animal in Africa, bar the mosquito, is the hippopotamus, and it kills about 3,000 Africans every year. And everyone thinks, "Oh, aren't they nice and cuddly? Look at this nice and cuddly 2-ton mammal that can run at 30 miles an hour." Yeah, Escobar had a zoo full of exotic animals, including hippos. And right now in Colombia, they have about 130 fully grown mature hippos roaming around. They are considered a pest in Colombia, but the problem with hippos, if this is not too hard to imagine, is that they're too big to move, they're too big to manage in any way, and they cost about $8,000 each to sterilize, which they can't really afford in Colombia. And the locals have insisted that none of the hippos can be killed. So yeah, there's a load of hippos running around in Colombia, and one has just been killed in a highway collision, and they are distant relatives of the hippos of Pablo Escobar, the world's most famous drug dealer, who once had the wealth probably equal to or greater than the entire GDP of South America. So I thought that was quite an interesting story. Alex has got his camera on in the studio. He's looking at me and shaking his head. You got any comment on my hippo story, George, before you go back to talking about the grueling horrors?
That's just crazy. With the Colombians don't want the hippos to be killed. Wait till they find out how the hippos treat them in a few years, if they're killing 3,000 people in Africa every year. I think then, you know, they're going to want to deal with the hippo problem.
Yeah, I mean, they are estimating, I'll get the full detail of the article up here, but they are estimating in a few years, just a few years, there could be more than 400 hippos running around the Colombian countryside. And that their free movement and defecation in local rivers could change the composition of the water. So they're not just the danger in terms of they will run at you at 30 miles an hour and run you over, but that they also could be a pollution problem because of the amount of excrement that might get into the water system. But local opposition to killing them is described here as intense. They have so endeared themselves to the locals that it may be impossible to impose such a final solution as killing them or sterilizing them. An ecologist who authored a 2021 study warning that the hippos' unchecked multiplication could severely harm the area's biodiversity and cost human lives. and told the Associated Press that people rejected her conclusions, calling her a murderer. So maybe like the is it a golden elephant? What's that? A golden cow? Maybe hippos will get elevated status in Colombia. They'll be the golden hippo.
Maybe
people will worship.
Maybe anyway, every other one will be named Pablo, right?
Yeah, Pablo the hippo, George.
All right. Let's see. Now, you also had another story about New York, and this is just as crazy.
Okay, well, let's do the rat story as well. The New York mayor, New York mayor Eric Adams, has promised a rodent crackdown after rat sightings doubled under his watch. Eric Adams is named the Big Apple's first ever rat czar. The mayor has long promised to bring down the city's booming rat population because their numbers have swelled under his tenure. Speaking at a press conference on Wednesday, Adams named Kathleen Corradi as the city's new director of rodent mitigation. I mean, imagine that as a top job title. What's your job, Darren? I am director of rodent mitigation, or rat czar. According to a press release from the mayor's office, Corradi will serve as the public face of Adams' rodent reduction efforts and will liaise between New York's existing rat experts in the Department of Sanitation, Health, Parks, and Recreation. There are estimated to be about 2 million rats active in New York. I actually, when I saw that number, thought that seems a bit low because rodents
do. It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't. It's a big city, New York. Yeah, and there's probably a lot of food and detritus and stuff lying around for these animals to feed on. They are notorious disease carriers, or the fleas that they carry quite often have parasites and pathogens on them. Right at the very end, there is a comment, and the comment says, "It's time for us to revert to the best measure that's always worked." And that measure is, just like I've got sleeping just behind me, my cat called Schrodinger. You give him a couple of rats, he'll make absolute mincemeat out of them. Most cats do this naturally, and I think that is probably a solution potentially to the rat problem in New York. However, the fact that they've got a rat problem suggests that New York has gone down the hill a bit in recent times and is emblematic and symbolic of maybe the decay of liberalist blue cities like New York, George.
I think you're right. I definitely think you're right. Didi, thank you so much for coming on today. And
my pleasure, George.
Have a great weekend and good luck with your campaign.
Thank you very much, George. I'm going to need it.
All right. Well, we're with you here. That was Didi Denslow. Now we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in a few minutes.
You should hear what Kate Shimarani is talking about.
In the country formerly known as the United Kingdom, they're now deciding that they're going to be injecting vulnerable babies with this untested, unlicensed, uninsured, experimental bioengineering shot from 6 months to 4 years because they're vulnerable. Anyone would think that they were trying to kill them. And of course, we know that all our elderly have been getting their boosters and now they're on to round five. Let's go back a little bit. If we go back to that time with the Third Reich that nobody wants me to mention, Hitler wrote a letter to Dr. Brandt and Bula stating that those that were going to be a drain on the war effort, those that were vulnerable, yes, that'll be your elderly, you're disabled, they were to have a full assessment first, a full assessment before they could be basically terminated of their life. And now it doesn't seem that we're getting that.
Kate Shimarani on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Google and Facebook They don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds, and they do it by the types of posts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis, by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied how do you ethically steer people's thoughts.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The creepy line at salemnow.com.
Ladies and gentlemen,
today's news talk.
News and information.
TNT Radio.
Now, welcome back. In the United States under Biden, now this is being talked about a lot, and we're going to talk about where it's coming from, which is Ukraine, eventually. But there's an anti-Christian hostility reaching unprecedented levels in culture and government under Biden. And observers are warning that it's increasingly emerging from state and corporate actors and multiple nonprofits. Now, this is, Biden has gone so far as to be the first president to abandon persecuted Christians and Jews in Nigeria. And what he's done is he's basically supporting Boko Haram, which is bows down to ISIS. And Nigeria has become the most dangerous country in the world, and a Christian is killed there every 2 hours. Now, for the second year in a row, Nigeria has been dropped from the U.S. State Department's list of countries committing the worst religious freedom violations in the world. And for more than 20 years, the President of the United States has been required to annually review that that list worldwide and designate those governments and entities that perpetrate or tolerate serious violations of religious freedom. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced this year's designation on December 2nd. No Nigeria. Every day in Nigeria, 17 Christians are killed for their faith. Now, this is per se. But there's a reason why Biden is doing this. Now, Biden just recently slammed the Florida Health Department's efforts that prioritize counseling over medical transitions for children, okay, transgender operations, calling these efforts close to sinful and cruel. And the president emphasized the humanity of children who struggle with an identity at odds with their biological sex, saying they love, they have feelings, they have inclinations. To that I say, holy shite, man. These are children. Now, at the top of the hour, we began a story about a 21-year-old who, for all intents and purposes, is committing treasonous acts against his country, the United States, by releasing these documents. And if you read into the conversation, if you actually listen, I mean, yeah, we all have this little sympathy because dumb kid, right? He's 21 years old. He's graduated school. He's been emancipated. He's no longer under parental control. He can sign contracts. He can go drinking. He can get married. He can do whatever he wants. But in reality, he's a young man, barely not a kid. So there's a little sympathy there. And Joe Biden wants these children, says it's almost sinful and cruel to not let somebody talk them into have operations or chemical castrations that are for a lifetime. Now, where is this coming from? Well, we talked about, you know, the first story, okay, with Nigeria, and that leads into it a little bit. So his idea of religion is a little tweaked. Now, he's also taking fire from both sides of the political aisle after proposing a new rule limiting the ability of schools and universities that receive federal dollars to ban males from competing in women's sports, as 20 states have enacted those measures. They're stopping transgender athletes from competing in women's sports. Biden saying, not on my watch, buddy. It's not fair. These boys can't compete in these girls' sports, regardless of if the girls get concussions or not. We'll stop the federal funding. So he's gone further and further and further. But where are we going with this? Well, Tucker Carlson made an observation a few days ago. Modern liberals hate Christianity, not because it's repressive, but it's because they are. And if you look at the steps that Biden has taken since he's been in office, now granted, okay, and you have to cut people a little slack about this too. We had a pandemic. Now, did they know about it? Did they not know about it? The President of the United States more than likely at that point knew what it was. We had a year, right? We're a year into COVID. But he locks the country down. So the country is locked down. Okay, Biden's all happy about it. What is it? Why is it that Biden is trying to push power? Trying to ban religions, trying to actually twist morals around, and trying to essentially just literally spin everything upside down like that. Well, it might have started in this particular push, mental push of his in 2019. Now, Biden is a Catholic, and he was denied communion in 2019 at a Catholic church in South Carolina over his support for abortion rights. Now, this went all the way up to the Vatican, and the Vatican said, hold your horses. Pope Francis spoke against moves by some American bishops to prevent individual bishops to deny communion to politicians who support abortion rights. Now, from then to here, Biden's persecution of the Catholic Church started growing and growing and growing. And right now, you've got House Republicans scorching Biden's Department of Justice over deeply disturbing targeting of Catholic organizations. They're being targeted by the IRS. They're being targeted by probes. They're being infiltrated by agent provocateurs from the DOJ, the FBI, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it may be Biden's revenge. So by denying Nigerian Christians protection, well, if you look at the area, it may well be that it's mostly Catholic, and that it is, you have the U.S. Congress on both sides that are trying to get him to actually support these people because they're being mauled. I mean, you know, one person is killed every 2 hours over there. But Biden's fight with the Catholic Church, what this shows is a vindictiveness that's just obscene. And we're talking about a vindictiveness against, what, an entire faith? Is that crazy? Now, where is he learning this could work? And what is he trying to get out of it? Well, in 2017, we started talking about the Ukrainian churches. And I talk about, you know, okay, how and why they are apostate, all right? Now, when you've got the metropolitan there, Philip Rett, who was actually kicked out of the church because he tried to, he tried to break the church in 1991. As soon as the Soviet Union collapsed, he tried to change and break the church. The Bishop Bartholomew, that's actually supported the Ukrainian church from breaking away from the Russian Orthodox Church, is very, very tiny. Now, the Russian Orthodox Church, the whole Orthodox world is about 300 million Christians. The bishop that the U.S. got to support Ukraine's this church being recognized, this apostate church being recognized, has about 3,000 Christians in his whole bishopric, in the whole country. And Bartholomew, the Turks wanted to put him on for trying to start a stage a coup and overthrow the country there. Now, I know this is a little bit confusing, but the whole thing about it is that with Ukrainians, with the Ukrainian, it's the autocephalous Orthodox Church. That's a mouthful. Their whole thing was nationalism. It had, and I told you this, the state is God. The leader is Christ. The church is the state, the people, and the prayers of the people are offerings to be burned. That's how they look at it. In 2015, this bishop, this metropolitan Filaret in Ukraine, told the Ukrainians, the volunteers, the nationalist volunteers, that they need to go and they need to fight and they need to kill the people in Donbas in the name of Peter Poroshenko. And it's easy to miss the statement, but when you give a blessing and you're a Christian metropolitan or bishop or priest, it's not in the name of Peter Poroshenko. It's in the name of Jesus Christ. This is how far nationalism is absorbed into this religion. And if you go to the churches, you'll see Azov symbolism at their major churches now, which is just crazy. Now, the Ukrainian church itself was begun in 1921. And their priests went through the regions, and that would become Ukraine in 1921 to 23, and preached the gospel of nationalism. And that's how this church actually got its start. It's a tool of state, is all it is. Now, what's this have to do with Joe Biden? Biden's is so wrapped up in nationalism, he's so involved in Ukraine, and quite frankly, he's old and getting a little decrepit. He's a little confused that that's not the way it is in America. So he probably doesn't understand why the church isn't backing him on everything, because that's their job. Now, We're going to take a quick break and we'll pick it up when we come back. This is TNT Talk Radio. I'm George Eliason.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Chicago's new city slogan should be, out of the frying pan and into the fire. Or, you get exactly the mayor you vote for. After bouncing benighted Beetlejuice Lori Lightweight, under whose stewardship Chicago sank to new depths of depravity and violent crime, they elected Brandon Johnson, a teacher whose idea of sticking it to the establishment was failing his students by not giving them homework and by passing them regardless of whether they learned a single thing. But lest you think that Brandon is some tyro, oh no, he learned how to game the system like a champion. After teaching only 4 years in Chicago public schools, he's expected to get a $1.1 million kiss in the mail every month for the rest of his life. And that's before his public pension as mayor of Chicago. Our guess is that it won't be long before the good citizens of Chicago start chanting, "Let's go, Brandon." But they need to know that nothing is going to change in their city unless they change how they vote on Election Day. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative, this is Viewpoint.
The lack of civilian access to working group meetings on the WHO pandemic treaty is a concern. Another is the degree to which the World Health Organization will no longer be making recommendations to member countries, but dictating to them. Astrid Stuckelberger, a scientist at the Institute of Global Health of the Faculty of Medicine of the University of Geneva and former employee of WHO, said in March 2021 that the 194 member countries are not voting on whether they agree on the pandemic treaty. Instead, they are legally bound to concede to its framework. This delegation put together to draft the pandemic treaty has been embedded in the constitution of WHO and is immediately approved by 194 member states, regardless of whether they adopt its principles. This delegation is legally binding according to the international health regulations.
You're with George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back. Now, you know, we're again talking about an apostate church in Ukraine. And, you know, if you can't tell, I get a little uncomfortable calling a church apostate. And, you know, but the reasons are there. Now, this church started in 1921 by a guy named Stepan Ivanovich Skrupnik, and he was born in Poltava, the Russian Empire, in 1898. In 1917, his uncle, Simon Petlura, became the Ukrainian nationalist leader for the almost formed Ukrainian Republic of Ukraine in 1918-1919. And this guy murdered over 300,000 people. That's how this church was formed. This guy, Skrupnik, worked for his uncle as a diplomatic courier in his army, and he was well aware of those pogroms going on, watching his countrymen get murdered. And he really didn't care because they weren't nationalists. He's starting to follow the trend. So what he designed was a religion he based on Orthodox, but not giving it a twist, but wrapping the religion around the politic. And so they would become inseparable in that particular new religion. And, you know, I've told you that when it started, it was called apostate right away. And that's why. I mean, can you imagine that this particular group led to Stepan Bandera. It led to people being more than willing to participate in the concentration camps as the killers. These are all Ukrainians that did this. All followers of Bandera and Melnik. And Melnik came out of this particular camp with Simon Petlura. And one of his religious leaders would be this guy, Skrupnik. Now, during World War II, Skrupnik welcomed Nazi occupation. He liked it because, well, the Ukrainian nationalists were working with the Nazis. Now, he joined the priesthood. After World War II, he moved to Canada, and he took on the name Mstislav. And within a few months of going there, and he was made a bishop of Pereyaslav. Now, keep in mind that he helped form this religion, more or less. His uncle was a supreme leader of these groups of people in Canada. They were his followers. After World War I, after they lost their Ukraine, they immigrated to Canada. So we're going through the years with them. In 1947, that's when he immigrated to Canada. He became the Archbishop of Winnipeg, and he just kept going. In 1949, he joined the Ukrainian Orthodox Church in America, and he became an archbishop there. And during his tenure in the U.S., during the previous bishop, the guy he was working for, Archbishop John, the diaspora were giving orders to Ukrainian Nazi troops during the war. In the 50s, Mstislav combined most of the Ukrainian Orthodoxes in the U.S., churches in the U.S. Within 10 years, Bishop Mstislav was responsible for all Ukrainian autocephalous churches in the U.S., Canada, Europe, and Australia. In 63 and 71, he brought the issue of canonical recognition for the UOC to the Ecumenical Patriarch Athanagoras, and it was denied both times. It was denied because this church was apostate. Now, he had control over the entire Ukrainian Orthodox Church. He is the apostate nephew of a Nazi leader who killed hundreds of thousands of people in his own country just to try to gain power, and he didn't. He wasn't able to do that. In 1991, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, Mstislav was elected the first Patriarch of Kiev and all Ukraine. Autocephalous Orthodox Church. That was the full circle, came around where he started from, he went back to again. And in 1992, at a unification meeting, the church united with one part of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, Russian Patriarchate. That was the legitimate Orthodox Church by Filaret. This merger was sealed by Mstislav and is supposed to form the Ukrainian Orthodox Church of the Kievan Patriarchate, well, whatever. But the problem is neither of those organizations legitimate because it was never approved. And so this Filaret, now this guy passed away, and Filaret became the metropolitan in Kiev, and then he tried to tear the churches apart. And this is a guy, and it's just Ukrainian Orthodox teaching. The leader of the state is a figure of Christ. Now, we've had this big, long, winding thing, and we get back to Joe Biden, and with all his experiences in Ukraine, he's wondering why the leader of the state isn't the figure of Christ. And it's not a matter of whether he should be holy or not. It's a matter of you should look at him as the figure of Christ. He is the supreme leader. He is the supreme power. And if his church did not get in line with him, he has the power to censor churches, which is what he's doing now. This is how bad American politics is getting. I'm George Eliason. This is TNT Talk Radio. And join me for War of the Worlds tomorrow. If not, I'll see you Monday. Bye-bye.